Today on Movie World, as we talk about A House of Dynamite, The Smashing Machine, and Tron Ares. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or on the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you.
Happy
Friday.
Yay. Feliz
Viernes.
Viernes. Thank you. I'm doing Duolingo Spanish.
Yazdi.
Yazdi is like level gazillion.
I'm 35.
Yeah.
Where are you?
Level 20, I think.
Well, not bad.
That's not good. Bad. 100 and something day streak. It's very stressful, though.
Well, you make it stressful.
Well, I told you not to make it stressful. I know.
It's really stressful. I'm like, every day, because I work during the day, and then in the evening we're busy, and then I'm like, oh, hey.
This is what happens every evening. I go, what's happened? I haven't done my duo.
Yeah, because it's like 10:30, and then for me, spend half an hour doing it.
Right, the same thing. For me, it shows up late at night, like, you have 15 minutes remaining, or you're going to lose your streak. And I'm like, I was going to go to sleep.
You don't have to have a streak.
This is true.
Says the person with a how many day streak, Rashmi?
Over 2,500.
See?
You don't have to have a streak.
But you do it first thing in the morning. Which is
no,
like,
not
or
always.
First thing
not
in the day.
I try and get it done. But then sometimes I'm also like, oh, it's 6 o'clock and I haven't done it.
Anyway.
I feel like I'm not learning any grammar, though. I'm learning lots of Spanish words.
Well, you can communicate now, which you couldn't.
I did greet our housekeeper.
Yes.
Because she only speaks Spanish. Yes. English has never been very good.
Yeah, and she was pleasantly surprised.
She laughed at me, I think. But no, it was a nice experience.
This podcast is not supported by Duolingo, although we are happy to have Duolingo sponsor us.
Given
all three of us to do it.
I know.
And we pay for it too, right?
Yes.
Yes.
We don't have the free version. We have the paid version.
Yeah. All right.
Okie dokie.
Okie doke. Yes. I don't think we've got time to do a streaming.
We have a lot of catching up to do.
We're going to talk today about like 9 movies, I think. We're going to do 3 podcasts, I think, back to back to back.
Yep.
Unless there's something you're dying to talk about.
We can wait.
Yeah, I feel like there's lots of content. Go watch some movies instead. Maybe the ones we're going to talk about. Okay, on that note then, let's pivot directly into business. Pivot. That's a Fred's reference. Yep. Yes, he's not
lost
laughing.
On me. Sorry.
Pivot.
It's from
a really good episode of Friends.
Classic episode of Friends where Ross is trying to get a couch down a stairwell.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that. Yeah, yeah. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
All right. Let's go to our 3 movies. So we have A House of Dynamite, we have The Smashing Machine, and we have Tron Ares. Rashmi, you queued these up in that order.
I did.
Then let's take them in that order, beginning with A House of Dynamite.
Yes, I will introduce that. Near Dark, Blue Steel, Point Break, Strange Days, Zero Dark 30, The Hurt Locker, The Last Days. These are all the films, amongst many others, that have been directed by Kathryn Bigelow. Kathryn Bigelow became the first woman to ever win the Best Director Oscar for The Hurt Locker. That is no small achievement. And this time, she has come up with her latest movie, which is A House of Dynamite. This is a movie that played in theaters for 2 weeks, and as we speak, is streaming on Netflix. So as soon as you're done...
it's kind of a Netflix pick.
Good.
Maybe.
Because
it is Netflix,
I haven't seen it. I remember I was not able to make that screening.
Oh, I forgot.
So, yes.
Okay.
I'm intrigued now. I'm going to listen to the review. Maybe I'll stop the podcast and go watch it.
Yes.
Maybe.
Or should I? Let's find out.
Yes.
So it's based on a book. And the writer credit for A House of Dynamite is Noah Oppenheim. And this movie, it has a pretty amazing cast.
It looks incredible.
Idris Elba.
Goodness
is
me.
In here. Jared Harris is here. Tracy Letts. Rebecca Ferguson is here. Greta Lee is here for a small part.
Yep.
Jason Clarke, who's been in so many of Catherine Bigelow's movies is here as well, and Anthony Ramos, who we have seen, you know, quite a lot in the last couple of years.
Crikey, it's like a who's who of A-listers.
It is a quite an ensemble.
Yeah. It's a quite an ensemble. And here's the one-liner for the movie, which is that when a single unattributed missile is launched at the United States, a race begins to determine who is responsible and how to respond to it. As I said before, you can watch this movie on Netflix right now. I think Catherine Bigelow is one of our better filmmakers, and any new movie from her is cause for celebration. What did you think, Rashmi? I know, Joe, you haven't seen it.
Yeah, so I think this is a really good political end-of-world drama. You know, it starts with a really good introduction of all of the government agencies, right? How all of these agencies work together. And then it really cleverly plays with time.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my quick summary and then we can go into it, Yazdi. You have to be awake. There's a lot of moving parts. You mm-hmm. cannot show up and half watch this movie. You have to be fully awake and engaged to understand what's going on. I like this movie.
Does it pull you in for
yes,
that? Because some movies
yes,
don't give you
it
that.
It does, but I'll talk about the concessions. So, okay. Yazdi, what did you think of this one?
I mean, we had the good luck that we saw it in a theater, so I had 100% of that. But
exactly.
There is a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
I'm just going to come out and say this is a 9 out of 10 for me. I think it's one of the best films of the year. It's a figure of speech to say you're on the edge of your seat. I was on the edge of my seat. Catherine Bigelow has always made very muscular movies. They're very kind of grungy, kind of, you know, war related. And I think with the exception of, you know, early M. Night Shyamalan, very few directors can just conjure up tension as mm-hmm. well as she can. She did that wonderfully in The Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
And I think in this movie, again, she's playing...
And Zero Dark.
Yeah. And Zero Dark 30. In this movie, she's playing with time again. And I know that bothers people. I came out of the movie and some people were ready to throw their drinks at the movie for a variety of reasons, which are spoilers. We won't get into it. But I actually think that what might be seen as bugs are actually features of the movie. How the movie plays out kind of bothered me. But the more I thought about it, I was like, yes, that is exactly how this movie should have been done. And kudos to them. So I love this film. I think it's very much off the time. This could be happening tomorrow, right? Like Arrival was a movie about how would the world react if a giant spaceship just showed up in mm-hmm. the sky tomorrow, right? This movie is about how the United States would react if a nuclear-powered missile showed up on our airwaves. It looks at it politically, it looks at it how the White House responds, how the Pentagon responds, how the people out in the desert, you know, ready to fight back at an attack, how they respond. And it's just
nuclear codes, all of that stuff,
and it's very well constructed.
Yeah. So I agree with you, Yazdi. I think it's a right up until the end.
Mm-hmm.
I would have given this a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, I know.
But end pissed me off.
Yeah, it's going to piss off a lot of people.
Right. So that's it. I think that's the concession of the movie for me.
Yeah.
I think there's lots of great tension and intrigue, and you don't know kind of who the proverbial bad guy is. And the movie feels like almost like a whodunit, Joe. It's almost like a thriller, right? It plays like a thriller,
yeah.
And so you're kind of figuring out, well, who did it? Is it someone inside? Is it someone outside? Is it alien? Is it a nation who's against us? But we never actually. It doesn't really play out, right? It doesn't really play out,
no
and
spoilers.
That's not what it's about.
No spoilers.
Actually, that's not what it's about in the end. And so I just was left feeling sort of unsatisfied a little bit, unsatiated, I think. But what we do see, here's what I will say. It's an amazingly acted movie with a great ensemble cast with some exceptional editing.
Yeah. It's hard. So she does a few things structurally with the movie, which I think is really kind of fun.
So fun.
For fun for me. But again, I could see how that might exasperate some people. The closest I can come, it's the equivalent of edging. If anybody knows what edging is, it's like...
Enlighten us.
It's a very R-rated thing. Edging is when somebody is making love, but they don't climax. They kind of come to it and then they pull back. They come to it and they pull back. And this movie kind of does this.
Tantric.
Tantric, yeah. This movie's kind of...
keeping you on the brink.
Yeah, the movie kind of takes you almost to a particular point. Pushes back, goes back, pushes back. So it kind of keeps doing that, which for me, I was like, oh, this is what's going on with the movie. This is how it's structured. So it filled me with wonder. But I bet people were like, just get me there. Just get me to the finish line. Don't push, don't pull back. You know, don't keep doing this back and forth.
Yeah, that can be frustrating, right?
Yeah. I really like the fact that for me, it was very educational because I presume a lot of this is real. It's based on a novel, but it's been the different parts of the White House, for example, have been very painfully recreated.
Yes.
It shocked me to find out that if this were to come to pass, the people in charge of this are relatively young people. Some of them are relatively young. Like they are their technical experts, but they are not seasoned people. It was a great education for me to find out that, you know, when we have people stationed in the desert to retaliate against some kind of an attack, that there are some shortcomings with that. You would think United States in 2025 would have 100% coverage for anybody attacking us. But based on this movie, it says maybe not. You know, maybe some of the things we have. Anyway, I don't want to give things away, but it was very, very eye-opening for me. Mm. I like that there is a good deal of, you know, political thinking in there. Like there are some people who are like, we don't care who has sent this missile. It's probably, you know, North Korea or Russia. Just bomb him, right? Get them before they get us. And I think the real time moment of it, like you have 3 seconds before this thing is going to hit, right? Or not 3 seconds, 3 minutes before it's going to hit. And what do you do? What do you do as a human being? Do you call your family? What's going on?
Yeah.
Just the raw shreddedness of the nerves. I just love that the movie got me to that space.
I was going
to
say, the one thing I love about this movie is it sets up really good moral dilemmas, because if you knew some information that you could help someone, but you're not allowed to give that information away.
Yeah.
So it does set up some really interesting dilemmas. So anyway, what do you think? You want to sum this one up?
Yeah, I mean, also, I just want to say, like you said, the actors are amazing. There are a lot of actors from television that I've seen before their year. Rebecca Ferguson, bless her heart, she makes everything better. She's
amazing.
She has such a groundedness about every time she appears on the screen, you just believe her that she is that character. I actually thought, Maybe this is a spoiler, so I won't say it. But Idris Elba is here, and he's not here for much of the movie. But where he is, I mean, I think at what part in the movie that he appears, it's pretty cool. I was absolutely tense the whole time, and I cannot reasonably ask a movie to do more than this. Mm-hmm. I think the movie just wants you to be aware of how we as a society in America would respond if we found out that a nuclear missile was going to hit one of our major cities in the next 45 minutes, and then in the next 20 minutes, and in the next 5 minutes.
What?
So just for that, I really appreciate it. I think a lot of people will have an issue because, anyway, spoiler, so I won't say that. It's a 9 out of 10 for me.
Wow.
I was just, you know, I've missed Catherine Bigelow. I think nobody else can do this kind of stuff as well as she can. It's a very well-constructed movie. All the parts kind of fit together. Very educational, very, very thrilling. One of the best films of the year for me, House of Dynamite. People should see it. It's on Netflix.
Sounds amazing.
It's a 7 for me. Okay. The end was unsatisfying for me. Mm-hmm. It felt like they couldn't write it, and so they just ended it. So not quite Dynamite, but it's well acted and worth a watch. And I think the editing is superb.
Yeah, the editing
is amazing.
I'm a Bigelow fan.
Yeah, you're a Bigelow fan.
The Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty. They were kind of back-to-back movies for her, but they're among my favorites of all time. They would definitely make, you know, in any given moment, my top 25 probably.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So Joe, watch it and see what you have to say. We'll talk again.
I will, yeah.
Yeah, and you can catch it on Netflix now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right.
next up.
Next up, yeah, indeed, is the movie The Smashing Machine.
Okay.
So, Rashmi, I think you've got the background on that.
So basically, this is directed by Benny Safdie, who we are fans of, Uncut Gems, and other movies as well.
But it's just one. It's just Benny, Benny brothers, right?
Yeah.
So, sorry, the Benny brothers have done what
the Safdie brothers.
The Benny brothers. The Safdie brothers have done what the Coen brothers did recently, where they each split up and made a movie of their own. So Benny Safdie has made The Smashing Machine, and then the other Safdie has a movie coming out called Marty Supreme with Timothy Chalamet. So they both this year done their own kind of movie, and both of them are being released. Yeah.
Good for them. Yes. Yeah.
So this is about MMA fighter Mark reaches the peak of his career, but faces personal hardships along the way. This very interestingly, not unsurprisingly, stars Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, and Emily Blunt, amongst many others. It's distributed by A24, which we always get excited about. And what did we think of this, Joe? The Smashing Machine.
Yeah, goodness. So it's been a couple of weeks since we've seen this movie, and I keep seeing the poster for it, and I keep being reminded of just how much I liked it. You know, this it's a very immersive piece of filmmaking. It pulls us like directly into the world of this guy, Mark Kerr. I think it's going to frustrate some people because I did find it ultimately kind of narratively incomplete. It's like, there's no arc here. It's almost like a narrative version of a documentary, and the way it follows these characters around, and, you know, from beginning to end, you know, there's no kind of classic kind of hero's journey, nothing for us to kind of latch on to, but it puts us in this world in much the same way. I think it's very, very heavily inspired by one of my favorite movies, which I always talk about, which is The Wrestler by Darren Aronofsky and with Mickey Rourke, because it has that same kind of gritty world. And I feel like, you know, a lot of the establishing shots are very similar to that, right? We have lots of cameras following people through doors and that kind of thing. So, my only nitpick, and we'll talk about this, is Emily Blunt is completely the wrong person to play the character that she played. I love Emily Blunt.
But she's
too much of an English rose to play, you know, New York cheap. But anyway, that's, I really like this.
Yes, Dee.
It's a very well-made movie. It has its heart in the right place. I think anybody who will watch this will not be bored. And it's obviously, you know, an homage to this person.
Yeah, who's a real person. I should have said based on a true story.
Absolutely based on a true story, who was one of the first, you know, big WWE kind of mixed martial arts kind of person to kind of, you know, to leave a mark, right? And then since then, now we have big superstars, right? Mm-hmm. But honestly, I don't know why. Clearly, Benny Safdie is a fan of this person and a fan of the sport. But I don't know why a movie has been made about this person, because like you said, and maybe that's to the movie's credit, it does not follow your typical arc of, you know, person who reaches great heights and then, you know, falls victim to, you know, drugs or addiction or mental health or whatever, and then prevails against it. It's kind of that, but it kind of almost...
I was going to say, all of those elements are in there.
Are in there, but it kind of... because they're following reality, it's a little bit diffused. So, I mean, I enjoyed it. I don't think I'm going to be remembering this movie for too long at the end of the year, certainly. And the other thing which bothered me, and it shouldn't, is that they're really going for that late 80s, early 90s look, that VHS look, which is this grainy kind of... I don't know how to describe it. It's the VHS look, pretty much.
It's a very kind of analog magnetic tape.
Look. It has a very analog look, which initially was interesting, but I thought at some point it'll change to like a more crisp, you know, high resolution version, and it never does. No, it's the like, whole thing is shot like a documentary, that like a tape you recovered from the early 90s.
The tracking is off on your VCR.
Correct, when the tracking is off. So that started to kind of irritate me. And then we'll talk about the Emily Blunt character. It's interesting, I've seen reviews, I'll shut up in a minute, but I've seen reviews of this movie where people are both angry with her character as well as feel highly, highly sympathetic with her character. And I actually see both ends of it, but it's been very polarizing. So I'm kind of surprised about that.
Gender dynamic conversations to have be had about this, but go on.
It feels like a movie that was literally retrieved from the 80s. Mm-hmm. I don't think it brings anything new to the genre. Mm-hmm. And to me, it felt very confusing because why are we watching this movie? What is this story about, right? So it felt like, oh, here we go again. So my end of movie feedback to the rep was, it's a great acting vehicle, but it's not a very good movie. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I sum it up. I actually thought Emily Blunt was great. I see what you're saying, Joe, but I think it's because she was so against type and we've never seen her do this role. I was kind of excited to see her do something completely different, but the role that she had was just strange. It was like a whiny hanger-oner.
Yeah.
And so again, then the Dwayne Johnson, I loved his transformation because he's a big man, but he looked like the Incredible Hulk. Like with hair and his body, if it'd been painted green, I would think we're watching a Marvel movie. So again, for me, in summary, like it just feels like a really good acting vehicle, but the movie was just dull. I don't know what we were supposed to. I mean, I get that they were the pioneers of MMA and MMA finally became WWF, I think, you know.
Right.
So I get that. But so then
if pseudo-documentary is a category, then this is it. And I feel like,
yeah, because it's not mockumentary.
No.
Well, no, mockumentary implies you know, that they're spoofing it in some way. But it's a pseudo documentary, right? It has that feel of following them around, of trying to recreate reality.
Yeah.
Of improvised acting, of maybe a looser script, and I don't know any of these to be true.
There's not that much talking
But I don't know that any of those things that I've just said about the movie are true, right? I mean, it's probably scripted and directed to the nth degree, but it has this feel of something that is found footage. And
yes.
And like, as he said, it feels like, you know, you found an old VHS tape from the 80s, you stuck it in, you pressed play, and oh, here's all this stuff that I recorded on you know, this shoulder carrying VCR.
Yeah.
I think the other bit also is that, listen, I'm probably one of the biggest fans of Dwayne Johnson. I think he has maybe not too much range, but he is such a marvelous screen presence. Like in his action movies, he's always so likable. He has charisma by the tons. And it's a very strange detour for him to take on this role where he's wearing some kind of prosthetic thing on his face because he looks very different. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be ungenerous, but it seems like his bid to try and get at an Oscar, which there's nothing wrong with that. Good for him. I'm glad that he makes his $1 million Marvel movies or his Shaw versus, what was that? Ebbs versus Shaw, Dobbs versus Shaw, the Fast and Furious spinoff. And, you know, good for him that he's trying this, but it felt like a lot of effort for nothing because, again, I like the movie. I don't want to be ungenerous, but it felt like, is this story really necessary to tell, right? Like, okay, there was a man who kind of somewhat triumphed over, you know, many things. You were reminded, you said it, this reminded you of...
The wrestler.
For me, it kept reminding me of the movie Warrior with Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton from way back when.
That another was movie that I liked a lot.
Such an amazing movie. It had so much more tension and it was so slick. And it, you know, it was again in this wrestling world. So it kind of, I don't know, it kind of tailed a little bit for me.
Yeah, this felt more about the relationship between him and the Emily Blunt character and kind of him rising, you know, he I think there was an arc about like him rising to become a champion, but they didn't do either very well, I think.
Well, again, I think that the movie was not heavy-handed narratively at all. And I think it may have even set out to recreate certain moments in time and explore certain themes. I mean, you know, there's some substance abuse themes that are, I think, very well explored without being heavy-handed. I mean, and we don't need to go to the dark wells of you know, the dramatic arc to tell the story that he had a problem, you know, and he worked at resolving that. And the relationship dynamics were very interesting.
Very interesting.
Because I felt it's something that was not particularly sympathetic to any of them.
To either of them, and, to both of them, yeah.
You know, it was also not particularly critical of either of them. You know, I mean, he is a, you know, the roid rage thing, I kept waiting for the domestic violence aspect of it to escalate beyond what it did, because I thought, oh, this is what they're gonna explore, but they don't go there.
Kind of.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, they know it's suggested and it's there and but it's not like a full on kind of, you know, movie about that. Same with the drug use. So again, narratively, it does feel kind of patchy and incomplete. I don't know how to express that better, but it feels like they weren't trying to go for those big moments where people break down and there's tears and there's reconciliation and, you know, redemption, and none of that happens.
Well, I think they're limited by the fact that these people really exist right now.
Also true.
So they are probably very restricted. They probably cannot dial up the notch too much because, you know, they'll be like, well, we didn't do this, so this didn't happen.
Libel issues, right.
Libel issues or whatever. But their relationship between Emily Blunt and Dwayne The Rock Johnson was very strange. And I think maybe the point of it is that people are complex and and everybody's good and everybody's bad. Because 100%. They both were kind of, like, he treated her awfully and she treated him awfully. And I'm like, why are these two people even together again and again, repeatedly? But that's how people are, and that's how things are.
But I think it speaks to kind of, you know, gender dynamics and male and female roles and what she needed from a relationship and what he needed from a relationship. I mean, I think, you know, these weren't two people that were in head over heels in love with each other, but they needed each other in some way, right? So again, I think it did that really well, and it was not heavy-handed. So
And I one last thing I want to call out, I think the most grounded character in the movie actually was the one Mark Coleman, who plays kind of his supporter and eventually becomes the person he fights again.
Yeah.
Ryan Bader is the actor, and I think he has a UFC background, but he felt genuinely authentic and grounded the whole time. Like, I wanted to see his movie.
Right.
So are we ready to score?
Yes, go. Yes, D.
I would give this a 6.5 out of 10, which I'll be generous and raise up to 7. I don't recommend people rush out and watch this in the theater. If it's playing on, you know, on the airplane, or if it's showing on the screen, it's good. I kind of feel bad because I do want Dwayne The Rock Johnson to get his flowers. I just don't think this is the right vehicle, and he's worked so hard for this movie.
Yeah.
I there was a lot of talk initially that he's going to get the best actor nomination for it, but I wouldn't vote for it. I mean, as good as he is.
Yeah. Well, I guess it depends on what else comes out between now and the end of the year also.
Yes.
But
yeah.
Joe.
As you can probably tell, I really like this movie. And I think, you know, it's got one of those, it's a very masculine, gritty movie. So I don't know that it has broad appeal, but it puts us in this world of MMA, which I've never really been into as a sport, but it drew me in and kind of, it's something that I'm kind of interested in now, right? You know, I want to go like understand what this sport is about, because it's so extreme, and we hear about it being extreme, but so for me it was an introduction to a world that I didn't know much about, and for that I really enjoyed it. I would put Dwayne Johnson on my best actor list for the year just by virtue of the fact that it's a very difficult character to play. He's not sympathetic at times, and yet I did feel sympathy for him. So that's difficult to achieve. And again, how measured this character is in terms of how he speaks, I think is very hard to do. So this is one of my favorite performances of the year. I like this movie a lot. 8 out of 10.
Wow. Great performances, but overall dull and lacks punch. 5 out of 10.
Can I just say one other thing? The movie is shockingly realistic about the fight scenes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was, I never do this, but I had to look away from the screen.
I think
so
I
many
did
times.
As well, yeah.
Because when he's called the smashing machine, but when people are literally beating somebody's face to a pulp, it's very hard to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know who, again, if you're making this movie for like 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds to watch, it's too violent for that. So it just seems, I think Safdie just wanted to make a very, very committed, realistic kind of, biopic of this person.
Yeah.
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 So, no, anyway, okay.
In fact, I'm just looking at Rotten Tomatoes here, and the genre here is listed as biography, drama, sports.
Yeah, so, that sums it up.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on then. Movie number 3 of the week is Tron Ares, or Ares, Ares, Ares.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yes.
Ares.
So depending on what your age is, the word Tron may or may not mean anything to you. Tron first came on the scene as a movie starring Jeff Bridges in 1982. That was the original Tron movie. And it was, at that time, it was highly regarded because it was about getting into the inside of a computer and the digital world and people lost and all of that. And some of the special effects were groundbreaking for that time.
It was made for like teenage Joe, video game aficionado, nerd, all of that.
Right. And Walt Disney, it was a one-off, and I always thought it was going to be a one-off. But Walt Disney, which holds the rights, rights to it, shockingly, 32 years later, came up with the movie Tron Legacy, which came out in 2010. It was not a movie that was well received. And now, again, strangely, 15 years later, they've come up with a third part, which is Tron Ares. Now, Tron Ares is directed by Joachim Ronning. And Joachim Ronning actually has some pretty good credits to his name. He directed one of the Pirates of the Caribbean movie. He made this wonderful movie called Kon-Tiki. And then he also...
Oh, yeah, you loved that.
I love that movie. And he also did the Angelina Jolie movie Maleficent. He directed that.
Maleficent.
Well. Maleficent. He directed
the Disney
that,
one.
The Disney one. So he directs Tron Ares, and the one-liner for the movie is, a highly sophisticated program, Ares, is sent from the digital world into the real world on a dangerous mission. The movie stars Jared Leto in the title role of Ares, who is this digital program come to life. And the movie stars Greta Lee, who we have seen from
past lives
and so, and most recently House of Dynamite, where she had a small role. Jeff Bridges is here, playing a small role. He's been in all the movies. Evan Peters from television, he's been in a lot of Ryan Murphy movies. He plays the bad guy here. And Hasan Minhaj has a small role here. And then the only other role of note is Jodie Turner Smith, who is in a lot of movies. She plays Athena, one of the other computer-generated programs come to life. So what did you guys think of Tron Ares? Is Disney completely miscalculating and trying to make a franchise out of something that won't be?
I love this movie. I really, really enjoyed this movie. It's highly entertaining. The effects are incredible, but it's nothing new. In fact, the Tron, the AI, are almost like Terminators. So it's repetitive, but my, what a ride. I love the music. I like the story. I love the effects. I really, really had a good time with this one.
Joe?
I loved the movie as a kid because it was about video games and there was so little video game stuff in the mainstream. So as a young nerd, I just lapped it up. I saw it a million times and I loved this notion that there were little people running inside my, computer that we literally were dealing with life and death struggles when I was like shooting aliens. It was like, no, that's killing people. Like, what a weird thing that might be. So Tron Legacy, when it came out a decade ago, was a disaster for me. It was a Daft Punk album. Yeah. But the movie itself was really frustrating. And what's really odd here is that I think they've recognized that because Legacy actually set up a sequel, right? With these characters being pumped into the digital world. And then, you know, we're kind of left with this cliffhanger. And they ignore that here. This, like, this didn't exist. It this just, didn't
there's
happen.
There's no continuity.
Like, nope. And all the better for it. Like you, Rashmi, I had a lot of fun with this movie. This is incredibly well-paced. The pacing of this movie is close to kind of perfection in terms of you are never bored. There's always one... I mean, it's very sequential. One thing happens and another, then another, then another, then another. But it always keeps the energy up. So
and
it
it's
felt
2 hours.
Exciting from hours. Beginning to end. I think the neon aesthetic was done really well.
Yep.
It was done. And you know, like... Legacy being kind of a Daft Punk vehicle. This was a Nine Inch Nails vehicle, like from start to finish. I mean, this pattern, this soundtrack, we saw it in IMAX. It thumped the energy into all of us for its entire length.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that Reznor is going under Nine Inch Nails moniker because Reznor is just Nine Inch Nails is Reznor. Yeah. So I don't understand the differentiator here why he's like gone back to his Nine Inch Nails moniker for this. And maybe there's some reason for that, but
Strange because they've been doing film scores for all the Luca Guadagnino movies, and there they just have Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross as their names. So, but in this one, it's explicitly stated Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah. So I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So I think you can nitpick a lot of things about this movie, but I think there are three reasons why everybody should watch it. Number one. Come on, it's a well-made movie. It's so much fun. It's so much fun. I mean, whoever has made it, Joaquin Renning, I mean, he knows how to construct a good thriller. I mean, I think this movie is superior to many a Marvel movie.
Oh, right? Sure.
It's many a Marvel movie, and it kind of hurts me that in the misjudging that Disney did, maybe they should have not sold this as a franchise, but they should have sold it as an independent action movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because visually, this movie looks so good. Yeah. Like all the neon lights and the motorbikes, and there is these bits where these arc lights made by the driving motorcycles,
phenomenal.
You know, they come and they diverge. And especially if you're seeing it on a big screen, you are going to get every single cent of your $15 ticket, right? So
I think that should be a recommendation. If you can, go watch this in IMAX, right? There are very few movies that you should rush out and see at the movies, but this is one of them.
It's absolutely lickable.
Yeah.
It has a polished glitziness about it, which is so, it's very, from a craft perspective, it's highly evolved. So that's number one thing. So, and also, please don't watch it at the back of an airplane. Don't bother. I think, or just, at least see it on a regular big screen. The second thing I really like about this movie is, look, I am a big Greta Lee stan, and any kind of a vehicle which gives Greta Lee the opportunity to be like a kick-ass action hero, I did not see that in her deck cards. Like, she's a small, you know, delicate person, but she's so believable as a proper action hero.
Yeah.
And anything that makes people familiar with her as an actor, you know, as an action role, I'm all for it. And then the third thing I was going to mention is the score of the movie from Nine Inch Nails. You know, I mean, I think Jared Leto actually is the weakest part of the movie. He has this Jesus complex. He always looks, you know, with the beard and the hair, and he always seems to look like he's just emerged from a pool. His hair is always wet. There's something weird going on with him. I'm surprised it's called Tron Ares because it's not really his story, maybe a little bit. It's actually more the Greta Lee character story. I wish it was called based on her name, but all small nitpicky things. I think people who say there's nothing good to watch in the theaters, they should go give this a try. It's a full masala movie. You'll have your money's worth. It's fun. It's thrilling. Yeah. What more do you want?
I think the other piece is that I think it needs to have some credit for really having this central question about existence and being existential. And I like the aspect of the AI, almost like Ex Machina, having consciousness, right? So that's very interesting within itself. And I think it is a good part of the movie. It's not just action and big machines. And then I did like these big, like almost like transformer type machines that are made by this like 3D printer that bring these things to life. Like if you can imagine it, you can make it. There's just a lot of themes in here packed into a very beautiful looking movie, I think. And I think, I can't believe it's only getting 53 on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm kind of shocked by that.
Well, because actually, it's a lot of gobbledygook.
It is.
Right?
It's a lot of gobbledygook.
I know.
There are so many of those movies that normally the critics are, you know, loud them. But I'm kind of sad it's only getting 53%. Yeah, I don't believe them. Because I think the three of us clearly love this movie and were very entertained by it.
I think it's probably because it never really transcends cliche, right? Like it is, but it doesn't have to be, but I think people were hoping for more. I think number one, I watched a review where the reviewer just could not get past the fact that this wasn't the sequel that they wanted. Right. So IGN.com is a YouTube channel that I watch. And the reviewer there was just punching this movie from the beginning of his review by saying, well, what happened to the end of Legacy? Like, I want that movie. And so he couldn't get past the fact that it wasn't that. And I think maybe, Leto's character, I think he did a good job here.
I think he did a great job.
That's a knife edge to walk here because, you know, you don't want to be that cliche Terminator guy, but...
I did bump into him in New York
when I was having
my hair done.
Oh, he was
his girlfriend gets his hair done from the same salon.
Okay. Well, good.
Gets her hair done. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he did have a bit of a Jesus complex, but he was blonde.
That is Jared Leto to a T.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really well cast here. For this.
Yeah.
I really like the Jodie Turner Smith character, who's the other programmer.
Yes,
she was
very good.
I've been seeing in a lot of movies, but she's so muscular and
she's a warrior.
Yeah. She was amazing.
Yeah, and costume's great.
Like, and she's no nonsense serious. I mean, she's who you call to get shit done.
Like, correct.
Yeah,
you need something done. Boom. And I love characters like that.
Yeah.
And I forgot to mention that. What's her name? Gillian Anderson is in this movie as well. I always like seeing her.
Yeah.
I wish this was called Tron Athena and it was about that Jodie Turner Smith character. The production design is great. And one last thing, I think I may have a clue as to why it's called Nine Inch Nails in this one, because Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross have acting credits as F-35 pilot number one and number two.
So maybe they are
in some scene as you know, they wanted to be in the movie and they're probably big fans. And so they wanted to separate themselves as actors from their music.
Maybe that's two paychecks.
Right. Three paychecks. Yeah, why not? So, okay.
Okay, so let's score.
Yes.
Joe, why don't you go first?
As you can tell, I had a lot of fun with this. I can't call it a universal recommendation, but as a pulpy, fun piece of action-oriented, movie, go see it big, go see it loud, go see it 8 out of 10.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, it has a lot of gobbledygook and, you know, it's very difficult to make a movie exciting when people are trying to code things, right? They're entering code on the computer screen. It's very difficult, but they somehow manage. I'm here for Greta Lee. I'm here for, you know, this adaptation. Forget that it's Tron. Forget that it's Ares. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If you just want a fun, mindless, well-constructed, well-scored, gorgeous-looking film, you know, just on a Saturday afternoon or one evening, you don't want to think too much about it, you could do far, far worse than this movie. Please watch it in the theater if you can.
What's your score?
Oh, my score is 7.5 out of 10. And because of the high craft in this movie, I'm going to bump it up to 8. Ooh. And I'm ready for Hollywood to embrace Greta Lee for more leading action roles or leading roles of any kind.
Yeah, I love this movie. 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Good.
Good. I'm glad
was
you liked
three
it.
Eights?
I didn't. Yeah. What?
Was it three? That's 3/8.
It was 3/8. Yeah. Uh-huh. I didn't. I guess that makes it movie of the week.
But I'm
surprised. I'm glad that you both enjoyed it as much. I mean, I see it.
I was giddy.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't mean,
I was giddy
it,
coming
it didn't
out of
mean
it.
Anything at all.
Yeah.
But it's just like being on a
good time.
On a ride.
It's a great
right?
time.
It's just being on a ride. You're going, up and wee down.
Yeah,
and
it's like, I think it's going to get a lot of technical love.
I hope so.
A lot of technical.
I hope it doesn't get forgotten.
Yeah.
Okay. We have thank some more. You yes. for sticking with our podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed these reviews. We will be back soon. We're going to record another podcast right now, so I'll try and release them regularly. But reviews of Eleanor the Great, If I Had Legs I Would Kick You, and Good Fortune are coming up, as well as Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein, the new Springsteen movie, and Blue Moon. Goodness me, we've been busy. So let's draw this podcast to an end. And in the next couple of days, hopefully there will be a new podcast in your queue. Try and keep up. Thank you for being here. Thank you for watching. Two new movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.